Is Angel planning to join us? Do we know?
She did accept, but I have not seen her on her yet.
Hi, this is Vivian. Angel's in another meeting. She should be hopping onto this meeting here shortly.
We have another minute. It's 1:59. Actually, it's 2 o'clock. Oh, right on the dot.
Right on the dot.
All right. I would, I think, like to, unless anyone feels strongly to wait for Angel, I would like to call this meeting to order now. And so let's call this meeting to order at 2 o'clock on Tuesday, November 25. I couldn't read my phone very carefully. And if we'd love to do it, a roll call would be great to happen now. Thank you. I'm not certain who's doing the roll call.
Let me go ahead and share my screen.
We're recording.
Yes. Okay. We can start roll call.
Am I doing that?
Yes, Chairman.
All right. Keith Domer, I am here. Maria Luna.
Here.
Allie Matthews.
Present.
Angel Azomalam. Not here. We'll watch for her and note her when Angel arrives, and then one vacant position. All right. That was the call to order. I've established a quorum. The meeting has begun. That's agenda item one. Let's go on to agenda item two.
Okay. We do have introductions.
It has been fairly customary for everyone at the meeting to introduce themselves, I believe. Quick and short, I'll start. I'm Keith Domer. I'm the chairman of the board. I've been on the board for 8 years now and chairing for the last, I don't know how many, six. I have no idea. used to be a state auditor for 30 years, taught at the University of Arizona accounting, and was Pima County's finance director for 3 years. And now, Allie, I'm trying to become very retired soon, but we'll see how that happens. And I don't know how to do this in an orderly fashion on screen.
Okay. We can go ahead and go to the other board members. You want to start maybe with Allie?
Thank you, Veronica.
Okay. I am the retired risk manager for the City of Tucson. Worked there 9.5 years. Prior to working at the City of Tucson, I was the budget risk management specialist for a local school district for 37.5 years. Currently, I am the immediate past president for St. Luke's Home. Do some consulting on the side and presentations for Public Risk Management Association. And I'm a retired grandma. So I love doing that and volunteering whenever I can.
Thank you, Allie. Maria Luna.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Maria Luna. I am the risk manager for Pima County. I've been with the county 12 years. Prior to coming to the county, I was the risk manager at the Tucson Unified School District, kind of much the path that Ellie followed with the school district. And this is my first meeting with the board, and I appreciate being asked to sit on the board. I'm looking forward to sitting on the board.
Thank you. So that is our board members. If anyone else in our audience want to begin, like maybe Maria Robinson?
Hi, everyone. I think everybody knows me. I'm Maria Robinson, and I am the city's new risk manager. I don't know what the right verb is, predecessed. I'm the new Allie. There we go. That doesn't even require a verb. I'm the new Allie. That's a noun. Yes. Why don't I go down, why don't I just go down the list? Let's see. Angel, did you jump on? It looks
perfect. I jumped up on another meeting. Good afternoon, everyone. It is great to see you. Good to see you and welcome, Maria.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure having you on board. We look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
Then I've got Annette.
Hi, everyone. It's great to see you all. Annette Gastone. I am with PFM Asset Management. I am the city's investment advisor for the last 8 years and really since the inception of this portfolio. So happy to be here with you all today.
Thank you. Marcella.
Good afternoon, everyone. Marcella Ceballos, Deputy Director for Business Services Department.
Martha.
Good afternoon. My name is Martha Castro. I'm the Liability Claims Manager here at the City of Tucson for the last 4 years and total of 11 years with the City of Tucson.
Roy.
Hi, guys. Roy Lush, City Attorney for the City of Tucson.
Sarah.
Sarah Vesic, Workers' Compensation Claims Manager. I've been in the role for 6 years. I've been with the city for 10.
Trevor.
Trevor Stack with the Mahoney Group, Insurance Advisor to the city. Been working with the city since 2019.
Veronica, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Veronica Haro, I'm the Management Assistant for Risk Management and also the Board Secretary.
Vince.
Vince Tracy, Safety and Health Loss Control Manager with the city for 7 years. Prior to that, was a safety manager for the county for 11 and 15 years law enforcement experience prior to that.
And last but not least, Vivian.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Vivian Neuschauer. I am the second deputy in business services. I've been with the city for 20 years and worked with the risk management fund, both on the financial reporting side and on the budgeting side.
Thanks, everyone. It's good to see everyone.
Maria, did we do Ted Mueller?
No. Because, yeah, Ted, I'm sorry.
That's no problem.
Thank you, Allie.
It's no problem. I'm Ted Mueller. I'm an Arizona attorney. I specialize in workers' compensation. I've been doing it for many years, and I've been representing the city of Tucson in some of their workers' compensation matters for quite a few years.
Yeah, sorry about that. Thanks, Ted. I was still thinking current board member and then skipped him.
That's no problem.
All right. All right, so that concludes our introductions. I'll turn it back over to Veronica.
Okay, thank you, Maria. All right, so next on our agenda is board terms. This is where we will discuss Ted Mueller. His term has expired. He has only served one term. So, Ted, if you are willing to or we want, we can reappoint or if anyone has recommendations. That's an option as well.
I'm willing if you choose to use me.
So, hi, this is Keith Domer. I would love to see Ted Mueller continue on the board.
So, Mr. Chair, may I make a recommendation or propose that we appoint Ted Mueller to a second term, understanding that it's got to go to mayor and council for approval?
I'm willing to do that. I'm not certain what the trust board's responsibility in that area is. Do we have we always had a trust board recommendation for new trustees, or is this something?
It typically goes to mayor and council via the director for approval.
All right.
Yes, I can prepare the documentation and get it scheduled for mayor and council, and I can get with Ted on getting whatever documentation I'll need, such as like updated resume, things like that. So I could work with Ted on getting that.
This is Keith again. I think the general consensus is that the trustees would appreciate Ted Moeller continuing, and he has our full support. I am uncertain if you're looking for a formal trust board action or a recommendation that we vote on, or if that general consensus is enough, Ali or Maria or Veronica?
I'll take a motion to recommend, and then we'll move it forward, obviously pending mayor and council approval, like Ali said, and then Veronica will complete the paperwork for Angel's team to go ahead and move forward on. It'll probably be a January agenda. I just know what the agenda looks like, and I know we needed an item on, and it's pushed out to December. So it'll probably be a January agenda item.
So move.
So
second.
Thank you, Ali. I didn't catch the second for the minutes. Who seconded the motion to approve Ted Moeller for a second consecutive term? And that we're excited about his fabulous service on our board again, making our trust recommendation to mayor and council to approve him as quickly as schedule allows.
I think that was Maria? Luna that seconded? It was Angel. Okay.
Angel seconded the motion. Is there any further discussion about the motion? I'm not hearing any further discussion. Let's take a vote. All in favor of the motion to recommend Ted Moeller for a second term to mayor and council for their appropriate action to appoint him for a second term to our board? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? I believe the motion passes 4-0 then. That's what I'll declare. And was there anything else under agenda item 2 to go through then? Welcome back, Ted. Hopefully everything will go smoothly with the rest of the process, and we'll get to continue working with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Agenda item 3 is the approval of the minutes for November 26, 2024. That is showing as an action item. I would love at this time to entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the Self-Insured Risk Trust Board from the November 26, 2024 meeting, those minutes as attached. I didn't catch the name of the mover.
Yeah. So move.
Hi, Angel. Thank you. And a second. Do we have a second?
A second?
Was that Maria seconding?
It's Maria Luna.
Okay, sorry. I'm trying to do a good job for whoever has to take the minutes to know exactly what's happening. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Chairman. Got it.
All right, is there any discussion about the minutes? Hearing none, I'd like to take a vote on approving the minutes of the November 26, 2024 meeting of the Self-Insurance Trust Board as presented in our meeting packet. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Are there any opposed to approving the minutes? I'm not hearing any, so I will declare the minutes approved by unanimous vote of 4-0. And then I believe that concludes agenda item 3. We can move on to agenda item 4, financial statements. I'm not sure who's going to take this presentation away, but whoever it is, it's yours.
So Marcella's going to go ahead and handle the financial statement piece.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. So on the screen, you should have the combining statements for fiscal year ending June 30th, 2025, and starting with the statement of net position. The statement of net position ended with total assets of $97 million, liabilities of $69 million, and a total net position of $28 million, including $25 million of unrestricted net position. I think in comparison to prior years, and let me know if this is too much detail, but I think I just wanted to give you a comparison to the prior fiscal years. Something to note is the increase in cash balance, and cash balance including the cash and long-term investment increased by $1.2 million between fiscal year 25 in comparison to fiscal year 24. Prepaid expenses increased by $2 million. I think this is due to a specific payment in June, fiscal year 25, for a renewal policy for fiscal year 26 coverage. And that was a $2 million prepayment. Liabilities, including claims and judgment, and current and long-term liabilities for claims and judgments, both increased, mostly due to the year-end adjustment on the IBNR. So those are the highlights for the statement of net position. Now going into the statement of revenues, expenditures, and change in net position. I have, let's see, total revenues of $21 million in fiscal year 25, operating expenditures of $31 million for the same fiscal year. Overall, tax revenues decreased by 32%, and this is due to the tort levy in fiscal year, in calendar year 23 and 24. It was reduced, and the collection is in arrears. Self-insurance premiums, there was a $17 million reduction due to the non-contribution from the general fund at year end. And I think this was planned and budgeted for. So there was, it seems like the fund is doing well, and there was no need for the year-end adjustment. Then investment income, there was a 24% increase in investment income, and I'm sure Annette is going to cover that in her presentation, but it seems like the investments did well in fiscal year 25. And then in additional miscellaneous revenues, there was a $686,000 increase from two insurance claims paid from prior fiscal years. In expenditures, something of note would be the $1.5 million increase in payroll expenditures. Public liability insurance increased by 19%, or $1.1 million, and benefits and claims increased by 17%, including the IBNR, again, the incurred but not reported adjustment at year end of $4.9 million. Then the statement of cash flows shows the overall decrease in cash equivalents of $1.6 million after consideration of the operating activities, non-capital financing activities, and the cash flow from investment activities. Any questions on the financial statements as of June 30th, 2025?
Go ahead.
The chair to Marcella. Marcella, tell me again the decrease in cash, what that amount was.
It was actually an increase. From fiscal year 24, it was a total of $90.8 million. At the end of fiscal year 25, $92.02.
Where in the statement am I seeing that?
Be the combined cash and cash equivalents that you see on the statement, the $42 million. And then the long-term investments of $48 million.
It's on the cash flow.
Your statement of net position.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
So I do have a question. One of the reasons the fund is doing well is because of the premium collections and the works of the staff doing well with working within the departments and collecting and payouts. Reduction of putting into the fund or generating money to give to the fund, if we continue to reduce that, we will go back to where we were before, where we're not collecting enough money. The decision on making that determination, I realize, comes from the budgeting process. I'm hoping that that is not a determination that happens on a yearly basis. What goes into making that decision is what I'm asking.
Could you ask the question again, Ali?
The question that I'm asking is, I realize that it is a higher decision on whether or not funds are assessed to departments in terms of collecting premiums on a yearly basis for the fund. And understanding the historical piece of how the fund was in a negative net position and not wanting to repeat that history, what are we doing to ensure that we're not regularly making a decision because the fund is doing well to not repeat the history of depleting the fund so we don't end up in a negative net position in the future?
Vivian, you want to answer that?
I'll step in here, Angel. And Ali's correct. In fiscal year 23, or fiscal, I believe it was 23, there was a state statute change. And that state statute change, as I understand, requires that the city keep the net position within the risk management program at a positive balance.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, we shored up the fund and transferred, and I don't recall the exact amount, but I'm pretty sure it was over $10 million from the general fund to make the fund whole. So going forward, we've made it a point to analyze annually where the fund starts first and foremost and where we should be in terms of reserve level within the public liability and workers' comp programs, and have held to maintain that, we've kept the contributions or the charges out to the departments at a reasonable level, at least to cover what it costs us to run the individual programs. The piece that is very difficult, and I wouldn't say very difficult, but is a challenge is to predict what the IBNR adjustment is going to be on an annual basis, right? So That's always the piece where we can't control it. All depends on, right? The IBNR is the incurred but not reported. Those are claims that have been filed, but not necessarily stating that it's cash out the door, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So it's managing through that and keeping within the state statute. We really monitor that annually, especially when the ACFR is prepared and when we begin the development of the budget process for the new fiscal year.
Okay.
So did that answer?
It does answer the question to ensure that the fund is not depleted so that it doesn't go in a negative net position. So on a yearly basis, the assessment will be reviewed, and to ensure that the fund stays in a positive position, there's a statute that addresses that. And that helps along with the initiatives that the department has to ensure that they're able to function and operate in a positive way that assesses and directs their initiatives for the year. So that helps tremendously.
This is Keith. I had a quick question about the financial statements. I was looking at the actuarial report as of June 30, 2025, where they had some estimated outstanding liabilities as of June 30, 2025. I was trying to reconcile directly those amounts from the actuary's report to these amounts in the financial statements, and it wasn't happening quickly and easily for me. Is there a reconciliation between the actuary's reports and these financial statements, or
what would be the specific balances that you're trying to reconcile?
Well, so I'm looking at page 4 of the actuarial review executive summary, section 1, page 4, for example. It shows the June 30, 2025 total liabilities, both undiscounted, discounted at 3% at the expected confidence level, $69.8 million and $54.6 million. Then it shows at the 65% confidence level, which I'm pretty sure we're not using, at $92 million, and then discounted at 3% at $72 million. I was thinking the expected confidence level was used. I was expecting us to discount at 3% maybe. So I was trying to figure out if and maybe we don't use the actuary's estimate to predict our, I think we do, but maybe not. So is there any way to tie page 4 of that executive summary from the actuary's report to these financial statements is my question.
So, Keith, I'm going to kind of help Marcella with that. There's no way to actually reconcile it because it captures a moment in time, and it's only as good as the information that the actuary receives at the point that the information is being calculated. The year does not end when the actuary actually receives the information. So she receives the data through June 30.
Perfect.
The finance department is still calculating and closing out the year through August. So it's not going to completely calculate and reconcile exactly.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. That works for me.
But you can hold that question for when Gail gets on the line, and she can probably give you a more complete answer.
All right. The while I'm speaking with you, Allie, perhaps you can refresh my memory. Also, the numbers for 26-27, where they're predicting what the expenses are and helping us determine the recommended rates, those numbers get used exactly and are translated over for rate setting purposes from the actuary's report. Is that correct generally?
Right. And that takes into consideration the IBNR
right. That's
provided, and that it depends on how things maturate at the time and how the claims actually play out.
Got it.
So there's a lot of fluctuation in that depending upon how claims mature over time.
Thank you.
That's what those methods are that they use, the different methodologies that they use, and the one that she selects is based upon the best guess of how the claims are going to mature.
And then I guess just to further the conversation that you brought up with your question, what I was noticing when I was reviewing for this meeting was that it seemed like the rates that we're going to recommend and talk about later do cover all of the estimated costs. They're not undercutting those rates to try and deplete the balance at all. It looks like they're fully covering the cost in the rate setting that's coming up. And we do have almost a full year of reserve of expected costs in our balance. So
at 50%.
Yeah, correct. Thank you.
I don't have any more questions. I don't know if Maria Luna or Maria Robinson has any additional information or Angel to actually add to the financial report that Marcella provided, but it's very good. It's a very good outcome. It's yes. Great to see that there's a positive net position and things are moving forward.
I don't have anything to add, but no questions, but I did want to say it's a really good outcome, and I didn't have all that history, so it's interesting to hear that, and it is a good outcome.
So I think that ends financial statement item 4A. Did we have a presentation on item 4B, the first quarter financial information from fiscal 26? And maybe our finance people stepped away for a moment. Is that what's happening now?
No.
Let me look in the chat.
So that is correct. So this is the first quarter, or actually it's the budget to actuals report. And I believe this is the version that gets sent over to the state as part of our reporting requirement, Maria.
That's correct.
Okay, perfect. So budget to actuals, so it's really just the actuals compared to the budget is what it appears to be.
Yeah, so then I apologize. I'm still confused because the agenda item says we're getting first quarter of fiscal year 26. So the agenda, we're not getting the first quarter of 26. Yeah. Agenda item 4B is actually a budget to actual comparison for fiscal year 25 and is not... We're not getting any fiscal year 26 information to date. Is that correct?
Veronica, did that come in?
No, I did not see that come in yet.
I didn't see it come in either.
No, I know Yvette was going to provide it, but I hadn't seen it come in.
And Jill has her hand raised.
Thank you, sir. My hand was raised to address the question that you posed on the date of the information that we're looking at. Because there is a 4B, but the 4B is as of June 2025, so there has to be some disconnect.
So what I would like to see, if at all possible, for us to actually view the item, this item would have to be pulled from the agenda because we don't have the correct financials for the first quarter.
But we could talk about the budget to actuals perhaps as part of item 4A if they wanted to tell us about the budget to actual comparison. It is fiscal year 25, a portion of the fiscal year 25 unaudited financial statements. And if they wanted to discuss this statement with us or present any information on here, I think it might fit under 4A. We just don't have anything for 4B. Because 4A is fiscal year 25 unaudited financial statements, and this fiscal year 25 budget to actual statement, I think fits under there. Ellie,
your first quarter takes you through September 30. This ends June 30. So she could provide a verbal that gives us budget to actuals. Yeah, we can proceed with discussion, and then they could follow up with the actual written document in an email to us later.
Yeah, I would love to see the first quarter information there, but I think, yes, because this is fiscal year 25, if we continue 4A, we can talk about it, but there's nothing for 4B for us to see right now, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Are they still on the line? Is Marcella still there?
I'm here, yes. Apologies, I have to step away, but I'm here.
I do see Angel's hand up. I'm not sure if Angel, you had something.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, the information Marcella presented under 4A, I am thinking would include the information before us.
Correct.
Right. She provided the statement of a, could you go back to the other one with the three, right, there we go.
Yeah.
She provided the statement of revenues, expenditures, and change, which would, I'm thinking, this would, and Marcella, correct me if I'm wrong, this is what was is included in the CAFA, the ACFA sent to the auditors.
That is correct, Angela.
Okay. So yes. It's more up to date than the other attachment we were looking at.
Correct. Yes.
Perfect. Okay. So this is the more current information, Mr. Chair.
However, these statements don't include anything about the budget on there, and that budget to actual statement is a little bit interesting, especially because it shows how little we budgeted for investment income and how well our portfolio did for fiscal 25. So,
yeah,
I just wanted to point that out if we had a chance to discuss this. So, anyway, Maria, you have your hand up.
I do, Mr. Chairman, and to Ali, are you looking for an budget to actual as of 9/30/2025?
That would be the first quarter of fiscal year 26, and that's what the agenda item indicates.
Okay, so I am happy to share my screen, and I know Vivian is familiar with this. I don't know about Marcella because Marcella's newer to helping us out with our fund. But I don't have as of 9/30. So let me just say that up front. What I do have is through 9/22/25. You will see up there the budget to actual for 2026 as of 9/22. Okay. So I'm happy to scroll. We'll get the right document out to you, but I'm happy to scroll down. There are obviously other program areas that flow through Fund 602, which is the risk management fund.
Right.
But the ones that you guys are concerned with, the ones that the board has oversight over are our workers' compensation and the public liability. So this is the first part. That's our workers' compensation fund.
So then I guess the question I would have is anything alarming happening in a financial nature for the fund in the first 2 3/4 months of fiscal year 26?
I'm going to say nothing alarming. So I'm going to point out from the report, you will see that there's a paragraph in this year's report that addresses an ICA substantive policy statement that Mayor and Council motioned to approve and adopt. And so what that had the effect of doing was affecting some adenocarcinoma claims. And Roy can actually probably speak to that if you have specific questions about the process or the legal piece. But what that had the effect of doing was reversing denials on 3 claims that we had. So 2 were with the fire department, 1 was with the police department, and the police department claim that was denied originally is working its way through the process. So I would say not of significant financial impact, but potentially could because we've adopted that position moving forward for any claim that might come forward to us. So I would say that was probably one of the things, and like I said, I did address that in the annual report. And then on the workers' comp, on the public liability side, I would say no, nothing of significant financial impact to report because we did have, and it was addressed in the actuary meeting that we had this just a couple months ago, 2 or 3 months ago, and we had to adjust reserves on 2 lawsuits that we are that are being worked on. But those were captured in the actuary report.
Right. So Maria, would those be captured in your IBNR? I think when Vivian and Marcella are doing their assumptions mid-year, they're capturing that in the IBNR. And so none of that would be unexpected from Correct. A budget fluctuation. So I think what Keith is saying is yes, we covered most of that in Marcella's report. So I think at this point with there not being any real outliers, I think we don't really need to see anything other than if there's a written document that you want to provide us later that basically shows what you have in writing, that's fine. Having the discussion, knowing that there aren't any outliers and seeing what you've included in your annual report, I think would be sufficient for our next meeting when we choose to have that, unless Maria, Angel, and Keith feel differently at this point.
I agree with Allie that seeing the draft information through 922 and the discussion we had from staff, I'm comfortable with the first almost quarter information from fiscal 26 that was presented in there. And I don't need any follow-up specific for that item to receive after the meeting. I'm comfortable till our next meeting.
I would agree with that. I think that was helpful to see that additional. I don't think I need to see anything further.
All right. Thank you, guys. Have any additional questions about the financial statement item 4 on the agenda, or did staff have any additional information to present for agenda item 4? I'm not hearing any, so I'm going to say we're done with agenda item 4. Thank you very much for the information. And we can move on to agenda item 5, the tort liability payment update. Thank you.
So this is the amount that was put forward through that was on a mayor and council agenda to approve as what we would like to recover. So did a remarkable job. There were 19 claims that contributed to this almost near $1 million. And that's also a chart in the annual report as well.
Great. So then this amount will be requested and received as revenue during fiscal 26 in the fund?
Well, that's certainly the idea.
Great.
Okay. Yes.
All right. That's the likely and likely and expected outcome.
It is more than hopeful. It is a likely expected outcome. So far, we have been successful in recovering or getting those funds in. It's similar to our cancer reimbursement fund. It is. We are always hopeful, especially since there is no cap on the state's fund for that we will recover what we have put in for.
I don't recall that we've ever been declined when we've submitted this.
Correct.
Correct. Okay. All right. Any additional questions on the tort liability payment update? And I apologize. I don't have presenter information on my agenda, and I didn't go through to define all of those before the meeting. So sorry for any confusion there on my part. Agenda item 6, the fiscal year 26 actuary review and presentation. That's an AMI presentation. So I would love to have AMI take that away. I'm also looking at the agenda item 7, the fiscal year 27 cost allocation recommendation. I don't have a presenter listed there. I'm just letting you know that I'm not prepared to present those cost allocation recommendations. So I'm hoping that someone from the city is presenting those cost recommendations when we get to agenda item number 7. But right now we're at agenda item 6. It's the AMI presentation, and you can take that away with the presentation.
And Veronica, if you want to put the presentation up, I just had Gail let her know to join from AMI.
Okay,
so she should
thank
be jumping
you.
On
thank
here.
You. I just received the email from her. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gail, are you there? Can you hear us? I see her on there, but she's on mute. You're on mute, Gail.
How about now?
Oh, got you now.
Good. Very good. Okay, ready to start?
Yep. Take it away.
Yes. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Gail Flannery. I'm an actuary with AMI Risk Consultants, and I'm going to hit the high points of the annual study that we perform for the city and try not to drown you with too many numbers. But please stop me if you have questions. I don't mind being interrupted at all. Our firm is based out of Miami. I'm actually outside Charlotte, but we're out of Miami. We've been in business for 33 years, and we've been working with the city since 2014, performing this annual study. All of us who work on your report are members of the Casualty Actuarial Society and the American Academy of Actuaries. Next. Let's see. Okay, we have several things that we estimate in the study, and one of the primary ones is the city's outstanding claim liability or loss reserves as of the end of the fiscal year for workers' compensation and for liability. And all of our estimates are limited to the city's retention. The city should record an actuarial estimate in its balance sheet. The minimum estimate that should be recorded is the discounted estimate at the expected confidence level. Within the report, we produce, you know, undiscounted and discounted and different confidence levels. But the minimum is the discounted at the expected if you want to be in compliance with GASB. Our estimates allow for both reported claims and for claims that may have occurred but not been reported yet. Excuse me. The other things that are estimated in the study is the projected cost of new claims that are going to occur in future years and an allocation of those costs to the various departments. And finally, we do estimate the cash needs that will be needed for paying claims. And this is probably the most uncertain of all the estimates, trying to predict the cash needs, especially for liability claims. You know, we don't really have a crystal ball saying when those liability claims are going to settle and pay out. We're just basing it on the history. So I think that's probably the least certain of all the estimates that we produce. And the loss reserves are distributed by coverage like this. About half are for workers' comp indemnity claims. And then the other half is split between medical and workers' comp medical and liability. Compared to the reserves last year, there was an increase of $2.5 million or 3.7% this year. And you can see that was associated primarily with liability, the workers' comp estimate had a slight decrease, a small decrease. The indemnity decreased by $1.1 million. Prior accident years developed by less than we expected, and that helped offset the new reserves that were added in for 2025 claims. The medical increase was about $800,000, and that was really our own assumption strengthening. We were worried that you might incur some adverse development moving forward, and we did strengthen an assumption that caused that increase. So, okay, the big news was the liability increase, which was $2.8 million. Among prior years, there was sort of a mix of favorable and adverse development, but overall the development was adverse, particularly in the 2024 year. There was like a $5 million adverse development in 2024. In addition, the new claims that reserves for new claims was larger than what paid out. So You know, what we added in was more than what was reduced by payout. So that contributed about $1 million to that $2.8 million. That table below shows some of the individual claims that had significant changes in their values during the past year. And some are positive and some are negative. You see halfway down in 2022, there was one that was valued at $3 million last year, and now it's only $1 million this year. But at the bottom of the table, that is what caused the adverse development. For 2024, there were two claims that were not reserved at all last year, and there's one is a $2 million and one is a $3 million now. So that was where we took the hit in 2024 with the reserve increase. Next. Okay, here's our projection of what claims will cost for future years, workers' comp and liability combined. You know, we think it's going to start at around 12.8, 12.9 million and gradually increase over time. So by 2930, it would be 15.5 million. The cash flow, here's the least reliable estimate, especially for liability again. We think that if things pay out the way they have in the past, that there will be, you know, with $13 to $14 million a year that you'll need in cash to pay out what comes due. Here are some graphs that show the claim cost trends. This is workers' comp indemnity. The bars are the claim severity or the average cost per claim, and you can see a general increase over time. The line graph is the number of claims per employee, and you can see long run there's been a decrease, but it's kind of stabilized in the last, I don't know, 10 years maybe. Here's the same graph for workers' comp medical. Again, with the line graph, you see the decrease over the long run in the number of claims per employee, with it sort of jumping up the last couple of years. And the bar graph, again, showing the average claim with an increase over time, which is what you would expect for medical. For liability, it's hard to see a pattern here. It bounces around, which, again, is pretty typical for liability claims. I think the frequency is actually pretty flat over time. You can make your own judgment, except for the last couple of years where it's blipped up. And the severity, I think, is getting a little worse. The bad years are a little bit worse than they were in the past. This is the allocation of workers' comp by department. As you would expect, fire and police make up maybe 70% of the total, which is typical again. The allocation, what we allocated this year for 26-27 for workers' comp, was 6.7 million for losses, 2.8 million for expenses, which was overall a 9% increase compared to last year. The allocations for liability, again, police is still a big piece of the pie, but fire steps down and is more in line with, you know, water and environmental services, transportation, which are all about, you know, 10 to 12%. Of the total. For liability, we allocated 4.7 million for losses, and again, 4.7 million for expenses, which was an 8% increase compared to last year. In terms of cost per employee, workers' comp and liability are very similar. They're all about $2,100, say, per employee for losses and expenses for the program. The cost per employee, workers' comp increased $142, and that was the higher loss component for medical. The expense component increased by only 2%. The liability increased to $118 per employee. Again, it was the loss component, not the expense component, which was a minor increase only. We're using standard actuarial methods, the same ones that we've used in the past. You know, we don't look at individual claims. Everything's grouped by the year of the accident. We're applying the city's loss development history. You have a long, nice long history that's been compiled. The estimates are discounted at 3% to recognize investment income that can be earned before claims pay out. And we estimate margins for higher confidence levels that you'll see in the reports. And that's done via simulation model. And, of course, everything's an estimate. Everything's an estimate. It's uncertain. Thank you. And if there are questions, I would be glad to address them.
Gail, this is Keith. I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
I should have jumped in, but I didn't get there at time. Can we go back to slide 8, maybe? You, on slide 8 here, you mentioned those two claims, the $2 million and the $3 million claim that we didn't reserve anything for in prior years. Are those examples of items that would be included in our incurred but not reported estimate? And if so, was our incurred but not reported estimate large enough to cover that $5 million for those two claims? Or is that not related, these unreserved claims and our incurred but not reported amount?
No, you're exactly right. Those should have been covered by IBNR, but they were not. We didn't expect $5 million.
So we didn't estimate our IBNR high enough to cover these two claims.
That's exactly right.
And that's why they're standing out as being one of the reasons why they're standing out and being significant.
Exactly.
Correct. Okay. Correct.
Based on history, we would not have expected $5 million to come in like that.
Right. Yeah. Cool. Okay. And then I had a question on slides 15 and 17. So these are 15 here for workers' comp. These are the allocations to the department that you're recommending to fully cover all of the estimated costs for that fiscal year. If everything goes surprisingly like we estimated, and we charge our departments $9.5 million, that should fully pay for all of the losses that were expensed or expected to be expensed in 26-27.
Okay. For workers' comp.
For workers' comp, correct.
But it depends on what you mean by expensed. It covers the claims that occur during 26-27, which are going to pay out over many, many years.
Got it.
Right.
Yeah. And that's okay. The cash flow that's needed.
This is not the cash flow. Right.
Okay, so this is the expense piece.
On the financial statements.
Yes.
On the financial. So, same thing on
17, then. That's the same allocation for liability. Those rates would fully cover all of the claims that we incur that are expensed or expected to be expensed in fiscal 27, regardless of when the cash flows happen. That's what we're expected to put on the financial statements. We're fully covering all of our fiscal year costs if we assess these rates to the department.
Yes.
Great. Thank you.
And that's at 50%, right?
Yes, this is at the expected, and it's
right.
Yes.
And expected is 50%. That means we're just as likely to overestimate as we are to underestimate, correct?
That's exactly what it means. Yes.
Thank you.
So, Keith, go back to your question on the reconciliation of the $69 million budget.
Yeah. Back to my question. Gail, so you want me to ask Gail that question? Is that?
Yeah, because I believe what she's going to say is essentially it's a picture captured in time, and it's not going to reconcile to the actual budgeted amount that is given as an expense
on
I'm
our
not,
actors.
I'm not certain, Gail, which slide this was covered, but I know it's on page 4 of the executive summary in the actuary's report. You did mention the estimated liability at June 30, 2025. It's presented at the expected confidence level, undiscounted and discounted at 3%, both of those in the executive summary. It's also presented at the 65% confidence level, meaning we're more likely to overstate rather than understate. We're being very conservative there. That's showing 92 and 72 million, for example, for undiscounted and discounted. So what I was trying to do, I believe that the city of Tucson chooses to use the expected confidence level for their financial statement reporting, discounted at 3%. And then I was seeing 54.599 million as the liability, undiscounted and 69, or discounted at 3%, and 69.8 million undiscounted. And I was trying to reconcile those amounts directly to the financial statements, and I could not do that directly. And Allie was helping me understand that there are reasons why these estimates presented at a point in time a while ago might be differ slightly from the estimates that, and there might be other information affecting that liability amount in the audited financial statements of the city. So I guess my question is, I was expecting these numbers to go directly to the financial statements, and I'm understanding that there are reasons why they wouldn't. And if you could give me a couple reasons why maybe these amounts in the executive summary wouldn't translate directly to the financial statements, that would be great.
I think I don't know what those reasons are.
Okay.
I think I don't know what adjustments you might make between these numbers and what ends up in the financial statement. This is as of 6:30, right?
Right.
As of 6:30. So you didn't record exactly 59,599 as the liability.
That's not what I'm seeing on the unaudited financial statements, correct? Okay. I'm seeing a liability that's closer to $66 million if you only include claims payable, and closer to $69 million if you include the remediation obligations.
I don't know what the adjustments are between.
Great. Okay.
Sorry.
That's all right. Thank you, Gail.
So, Angel, that would be something that we would want perhaps our financial team to look into to see what the differences are. I don't know if it has something to do with the minimum liability that must be recorded that coincides with the recommendation from the actuary. And that's utilized when putting together the ACFA numbers in terms of liability, or how that coincides.
Okay. I'll speak with Marcella. The ACFA is still in draft because it's unaudited. I'll speak with her, and then we'll probably have to reach out to our auditors.
As an example, what I was thinking was maybe you chose a different discounting rate, or chose not to undiscount it because the financial statement numbers were very close to the undiscounted one. So that's, I didn't know if the city chose to choose. I think they're reporting above what the minimum GASB 10 requirements are, but I didn't know which factors they were, if they changed factors for that selection, maybe, in the either the confidence level or the discounting.
Okay, we'll take a look at it.
Okay, thank you. Gail, did you have any additional information to present, or did we have any additional questions for about the actuarial calculations and presentation?
I have nothing else to present.
I'm sorry, Gail, I missed that.
I have nothing else to present.
I, as always, Gail, appreciate your presentations. Thank you so much for the work that you do, and I love your slides and listen to you present them. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gail.
Good to see you, Gail.
Sure, you too.
Agenda item 7, then, is an information and action item. I'm probably going to be asking for a motion to relating to our recommendation to the city for what rates they apply. And agenda item 7, the fiscal year 27 cost allocation recommendations, if someone wants to present those to us to start our discussion and lean us towards what our motion should be, that would be great.
I believe that would be Maria Robinson or someone.
Okay, I think it,
unless it's Gail, one of the two.
I think Gail had done it in the past. Is she still on?
Actually, go for it, Maria.
Nope. You can do it. I can call her. You want me to call her? You want me to reach out to her?
Well, actually, I can make the motion. Basically, it's those slides with appendix G and H. She did it in her presentation,
right.
Essentially with the amounts that she's recommending. And based on appendix G and appendix H, appendix G is the work comp, medical, and liability to the tune of $9.5 million. That is the AMI recommendation. And for the liability piece, it's to the tune of 9.36 or 9.4 million as the expense piece. So I recommend, or I make an motion that we approve the AMI recommendations presented for cost allocations in Appendix G for work comp medical and Appendix H for liability.
Do we have a second?
Second, Angèle.
Thank you, Angèle. I'll start the discussion, if I may. I asked Gail my questions about these, that these were designed to fully recover all costs for the trust for both workers' comp and liability to the best that the actuary can estimate them. And so I'm good with these and good with the motion, and I intend to vote in favor of that. My only question is, I just want to confirm that the department has no intent of stepping in and adjusting these rates in any way to either try to recover more cost or try to recover less cost because of the, you know, if one might be tempted seeing the very good financial position of the trust to give a break to the departments and allocate less. And
that's why I asked the question earlier.
I'm hoping that that is not the case. And my question is it the department's plan to present these to the mayor and council as the department's recommended rate, especially with our concurrence with that recommendation? Is that what the department intends to do?
Mr. Chair. Oh, Angela, you want to go ahead?
No, you go ahead, Vivian. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chair, what we typically do during budget development is we'll assess. We do assess what the net position is within the fund. And then, of course, we'll develop the projections or the budget for the next fiscal year. We do communicate this information with the city manager's office. And at the end of the day, depending on how well the fund is doing, as you could see, right, it's doing really well. In the past few years previous to that, the fund's been really hurting. At the end of the day, this information will be shared with the city manager's office, whether they decide to perhaps consider adjusting or not will be left up to them. But I'll also ask Angèle if she wants to throw in any other thoughts or comments into that.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chair, one of the reasons we assess what is being required and what is in the we have as a fund balance is that you would recall earlier in the in this meeting, someone indicated that the general fund had allocated $10 million to make the fund whole. As such, taking that into account, and the general fund always will, because we don't have much of a choice but to stay in alignment with state requirement. So we're adjusting based on the level of available resources within the fund for those departments that fall, particularly for the departments that fall under the general fund.
So then, Allie, forgive my memory here, but what I'm trying to recall is, ordinarily, does this process start with us and we make the first recommendation and then it get tweaked every step as it goes up? Or is it ordinary for the department to come to us and say, hey, this is what our recommendation is going to be. Do you guys agree? Which are we the first step in the process, or?
We're the first step in the process. Yeah. We make the recommendation.
Okay.
The recommendation then goes forward to from the board to the mayor and council,
right,
via the actual recommendation from the city manager. But the city manager works with the budget team within the budget constraints. If they feel that recommendation is too high, then they will adjust that recommendation, but they always come back to the department, meaning they will come back via the budget team to Maria as the director to say, these are the changes that we're making.
Okay.
And at that particular point in time, it's between Maria and Angel to advocate for what the needs are in order for the department to function, which is why I asked the question in the very beginning, because she will need to have the resources to ensure that her department, the risk management department, can function appropriately within the constraints that they are providing with whatever recommendation that they're going to make. The objective is to ensure that they never go in a negative net position again. And so that there is now a legislation that requires that they don't. But again, there are initiatives going forward to ensure that we don't. And Maria needs to be able to operate within those confines to ensure that we can continue, meaning the department can continue to function appropriately to ensure that they are able to provide those initiatives, whether it's in the safety realm, the work comp realm, the liability realm, the driving realm, whatever it is that they're trying to accomplish to ensure that the workings that they provide on a daily basis continue and or enhance going forward. So I think at this point, all we can do is make the recommendation.
So that's that. Let me apologize. I sometimes get my work on this board confused with my work on other boards. And I believe when we're on at least one of my other boards, we get pulled into this rate recommendation process slightly later in the process rather than at the beginning. And that was my getting confused about where we were. So I apologize for that.
We're in the beginning. We're in November,
yes, we're
which
in
is
beginning.
Why we do
Thank
it now.
You. Thank you. All right, so let me just summarize. What I have right here is we do have a motion to approve these rates as presented on these schedules right here on the screen that come from AMI's risk consultants actuarial report. We have a motion to approve these to make these our recommendation to the department and the mayor and council for setting rates for 26-27. And we have a second, and now we're having discussion about that motion. So I was hearing someone else that wanted to have a discussion, so take it away.
This is Maria. I just had a quick question to the history of this. I'm just wondering, what is the history of this committee's recommendation being accepted In other words, has it been where they've, you know, decreased the rates that have been recommended? I'm just curious as to what the history has been.
That's what the history has been. The rates have been decreased, but they've also been accepted.
Okay, I'm sorry. Maybe I misunderstood.
Yeah.
Okay.
They've also been accepted depending on what's happening with the budget during the year. So that's why you hear the hesitancy on Keith's part and on my part and the questioning, because it's not always been taken as it's been recommended.
Okay, that's kind of where I was going, and maybe I didn't understand all of that. So thank you. I appreciate that.
The good thing to note in there is sometimes they take our recommendations, sometimes they don't. I don't think they've ever increased the rates, but they have decreased the rates. And when that has caused a problem, they have provided additional funding for the trust to make sure it stays fully funded. So.
And actually, that was going to be my next question. They've not increased the rates at any time that you can remember where they've actually increased.
I don't recall them asking for more money from the departments than we've recommended, but Allie.
Not during my tenure, but okay. Vivian has been there longer than I was. So.
Not in the last 10 years, Maria.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good to see that. Thank you. Appreciate that.
And just to add to that, we have strived, let's just put it that way, to make the fund whole. It was never intentional to make the fund go in a negative. And the push really happened when the legislature changed and required us to maintain a positive net position within the fund.
Mm-hmm. All right. Do we have any further discussion on the motion on the floor to approve these rates as presented on the screen and as included in the actuarial report? The rates to fully fund liability and workers' comp for fiscal year 26-27, these allocations by department for full funding our expected incurred expenses those years. All right, then this is our important motion of the year. Do we do a roll call motion for this, or is it okay for me to just ask for Well, I'll just do it this way until someone stops me. All in favor of the motion to approve the workers' compensation rates and the liability rates as presented on the screens in front of us and as reported in the actuarial reports for fiscal year 26-27 to full recover all of the costs of the fund for that fiscal year, please say aye.
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 Are there any opposed to approving these rates to fully and fairly fund the our trust for fiscal year 26-27. I'm not hearing any opposed, so I'm going to declare that the motion is approved 4-0. And I like our trust board's recommendation for these rates, so thank you very much for dealing with this process and me today. Cool. That completes agenda item 7. Agenda item 8 then is the PFM presentation of our investment committee's quarterly update and our fantastic investment performance that I hope is continuing. And I hope I'm not setting you up for failure yet.
No
take it
pressure.
Away, please.
Absolutely. It's great to see you all. Thank you so much, of course, for having me. We've got our third quarter report here. I wanted to be able to provide you with the most current snapshot of the city self-insurance risk trust. But before we dive in, I just always like to just add a little bit of commentary on what we saw throughout third quarter. I think it really helped shape what the strategy has been, what we're keeping an eye on, and it also, you know, what continues to support the overall strategy in the city's portfolio. So, as we're thinking about it, third quarter, really just to sum it up, a few key themes that really characterize what we saw through July, August, and September. We did see this gradual easing of uncertainty that took place in the overall markets as I feel consumers have really started to digest the implementation of tariffs that were rolled out at the earlier part of the year. And the markets have really started to just become a little more comfortable with that at a whole. Additionally, when I think about, you know, what are we facing as we wrap up the year? Of course, we always focus on the Fed and kind of their decision making as it really impacts the macroeconomic environment. So a couple key themes there. We did see some cooling in the overall labor market. And, you know, when we think about the net creation of jobs, it really neared zero for the first time in a very long time. So companies are not necessarily going through layoffs, but they also are not hiring at the rate that they once were that we've seen over the last few years. So I think from a Fed perspective, that's very much a concern. Now, if we think about, you know, the opposite end of the spectrum, their other mandate, which, you know, their first one, of course, is the labor market. That's what they've been focused on. Their other mandate is price stability, so inflation, maintaining inflation closer to their 2% target. So we've seen an acceleration of inflation throughout third quarter. It ended up at about 2.93% to end the quarter. So a little bit higher. We're still hovering above that 2% target. So as we kind of go into the year end, we're thinking about, you know, what is on the Fed's agenda? What is on the horizon? Well, in September, I think the biggest piece of news from the Fed is we got our first rate cut of 2025 at 25 basis points based on their projections in September, which they issue quarterly. They projected two additional rate cuts to wrap up 2025. So we saw one of those in October with the likelihood of seeing an additional 25 basis point rate cut in December for a total of three this year. So that's really what's on the horizon. And, you know, just to kind of sum up what we're expecting from the labor market, a continuation of the unemployment rate to increase. That ended August at 4.3%. And then if we're getting an idea of where we're going to end the year, probably closer to 4.4 or 4.5. Not a concern, still historically very low than we've seen over the last 30 years. But I think the bigger concern is the acceleration of inflation. I think that's a potential headwind that the Fed is really trying to get a handle on. And I think that, you know, from a Fed perspective, that's why they've been a little bit slower this year to cut rates, making sure that everything has really worked its way through the market. But economists are really expecting that to be fairly short-lived. We're not expecting that to continue for any long duration. So I think that's the positive or the silver lining there. But as we think about it for the city's portfolio and, you know, what we're doing as far as the overall strategy, a couple things to keep in mind, of course. One, on the heels of the first rate cut in September, that was quite a big deal for the year. I think that was probably the biggest thing coming out of third quarter. You know, it's bode very well for the portfolio. Total market value, just over $50 million. We had accrued interest of $382,000, a little bit of cash left over. That's common, tends to accumulate with just interest as that continues to spin off, of course, from those holdings. Now, I just want to revisit that rate cut that we saw with the likelihood of, you know, an additional one in December, not to mention the second one that we had in October, right? So thinking about a total of three for the year. Looking at the effective duration for the city self-insurance trust portfolio here at a 249. Now, if I think back to where we were at second quarter, we were probably closer to about a 242 or a 244. Now that the Fed has officially pivoted, we have an expectation that rates are going to be lower in the near term. You know, the Fed is well within their rate cutting cycle at this point, and it's expected that next year we'll have at least one rate cut on the horizon. I think there's still some uncertainty there as to one, three, four. We're not sure. I think they're not sure either, but as of right now, we know one for December. But what does that mean from a strategy standpoint? We extended duration slightly longer than that of the benchmark. So for this portfolio, it's at about a 248, not exceptionally long. We're at about 100, just slightly longer than 100% of the benchmark. But what that means is we are able to mitigate some of that reinvestment risk because rates are lower now, where we didn't have that for a long time. So we were fairly duration neutral. So now we can be a little more tactical from a duration perspective. Now for you all, one of the things I like to keep an eye on is that yield at cost at a 448. So right here on this left-hand side, that 448 is very representative of the current value in the overall portfolio. Where are those securities coming in at approximately as far as a value add overall? So a 448, very, very strong yield at cost. If we look just below that, that yield at market, more reflective of where the market actually was at the end of September, the city's portfolio is outpacing that. So those securities were purchased, you know, a year ago, some of them even longer, where we captured the highest point of the market, really that peak of the market. But not to mention, you know, just looking to the right of that, the sector allocation, you know, I think the most important component is we're thinking about it at a high level, you know, based on the city's investment policy and objectives, we continue to manage the portfolio to safety, liquidity, and then yield in that order. So very well diversified across permitted sectors. And then what I want to highlight, just kind of keeping that in mind, right, we can see the allocation here. I just want to highlight this page just momentarily. You know, we talk about the diversification across permitted sectors, but one of the things that I don't want to overlook is how well we are diversified within those sectors. You know, looking at corporate specifically, since that's the largest allocation, it just under 40% of the portfolio, for the self-insurance risk trust. One of the things we can see, if we look at just those issuers throughout the corporate holdings, I like to see a nice diversification across industries. So, you know, we've got financials, utilities, healthcare, consumer staples. I think that's another important component when we think about diversification, not just across permitted sectors, but what does it look like within those sectors. And then just on that same point, just something for you all that I always like to just point out, you know, per the city's portfolio or investment policy, rather, there is a 5% issuer limit. So that means, you know, no more than 5% concentrated in any single issuer, with the exception of U.S. Treasuries or something like that, this is specific to the credit component. Just looking at these holdings, we can see that, you know, our own internal limit hovers right around 2%. So we're a little bit more conservative. The 5% is always my recommendation because it gives that flexibility. But more importantly, our own internal limit hovers right around 2%. So just kind of back to that safety, that liquidity component, making sure that we continue to meet that in all aspects. Now, I am going to just dive into a little bit of the activity for this last quarter. You know, we talked about, you know, the overall diversification for the last quarter. We actually reinvested in treasuries. So at the end of third quarter, what we really saw throughout the quarter is we saw spreads in corporates specifically start to narrow. We know that we have a healthy allocation to corporates. There's no reason to continue adding unless there's truly value there or we're rebalancing to some degree. But, you know, when we think of treasuries, they're the safest, most liquid asset class, very comfortable, still a ton of value in the treasury sector. So we went ahead and reinvested about $1.7 million back into treasuries in third quarter. And then the other pickup there is agency CMBS. That still falls under the government allocation. They're issued by Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, those federal agency names that we're very familiar with. They're just a different form of issuance. So still maintaining that nice diversification, that balance, but reinvested primarily back into government securities for this last quarter. Now, I'm going to skip over that. We talked about a lot of the allocation, but I just want to highlight the performance and then lastly, the earnings. So, you know, looking at the overall performance with this portfolio being a 1 to 5 year duration, we have a longer duration overall in the portfolio. But what we saw for performance in just this last quarter for the last 3 months for the city's portfolio, 1.37%. So outpaced that of the benchmark. And the benchmark that we use essentially is an agnostic set of data points. It's a 1 to 5 year treasury because, you know, we tend to hold a large allocation to the government sector. The treasury benchmark makes the most sense. And, you know, for that, the benchmark returned about a 114. So the portfolio having that allocation to corporates, to ABS, even to agency CMBS, which is still government, just really provided that outperformance that we saw. But even looking across to the 1 year, the 3 year, very, very strong performance across the board. For myself, I like to focus more on the 5 year because this portfolio is a 1 to 5 year. I like to really focus on that 3 year, 5 year return. You know, we think about the duration at just shy of 2.5 years, probably more in line with the 3 year. But, you know, 5 years is about the extent that we can invest out to, not only per state statute, but per the city's investment policy. So, you know, that gives us a long-term historical overview and perspective of what the portfolio has done. But more importantly, thinking about, you know, everything at a high level, that strong yield at cost, just a very steady performance or outperformance of the benchmark for the last 5 years gives us an idea of what we can expect to some degree moving forward. So very positive overall performance. And then just to round out the last component here, the earnings. I know Marcella touched on this a little bit as far as overall interest income, but just wanted to wrap it up with just where the earnings were at. So $532,000 for just this last quarter alone for the last year, over $2 million in earnings. And, you know, I think as we're thinking about the overall value, right, coming out of the pandemic, for all of us, it was a bit painful. But now that we're looking at being more strategic, we've had an extremely strong yield environment that we were able to capture. When I look here at just, you know, what this earnings picture has looked like for just, you know, the last 2 years, essentially January through third quarter of this year, just a very strong earnings picture. And I think that, you know, it's very reflective of being selectively opportunistic of the environment that we have. The city has done a wonderful job of reinvesting and allowing those funds to continue to compound quarter over quarter, year over year. And so, you know, we've really put that money to work to align with those key objectives. But earnings look strong, and I think the city is very well positioned for just the coming environment. So I'm going to pause there. I know that was a lot, but I welcome any questions. What questions do you all have?
I have no questions. Just good job. It's great to see, knowing where we started and seeing where we are now. Just kudos. Yeah, this is great.
Thank you. That is so appreciated. We appreciate that so much. And, you know, what's interesting too, thank you for that, Allie. You know, when we look at longer term portfolios, this last like set of 3 years has been a little bit of an anomaly, but longer term portfolios tend to outperform that of short term portfolios historically. So I think the city has done a great job with this being a 1 to 5 year portfolio, it being longer dated. We did absorb some, you know, some headwinds through the pandemic, but we've had the opportunity to really, you know, get tactical now. Wonderful. Any other questions or even just, you know, economic level?
No. So right. I do have a question for you. Going forward, is the strategy going to remain the same? Are we looking at changing up the strategy, knowing how the market is a little, how should we say it, scary? Just to put it blunt. It's really scary right now. Is the strategy going to remain the same where we hold steadfast and see how things pan out and use that strategic approach that we've adopted in the past, just hold in place and then reinvest as we see the market stabilizes a little bit more?
Such a great question. And yes, to your point, exactly. There has been, you know, not only a ton of volatility, but a ton of uncertainty throughout the year. So I think you summed it up perfectly. You know, to the question about strategy, when we are thinking about it, up until I would say probably, you know, second quarter, third quarter of this year, we've been one more duration neutral, and we really captured the front part of the market. We really took advantage of the shorter term yields that, you know, at one point were 5.25%. So now that that environment has shifted for us, what the strategy will be in the portfolio going forward are a couple things. We're going to continue to stick to a long-term discipline plan. I know that the market, there's volatility, there's uncertainty, there's potential headwinds also. You know, but I think for us, the most important component was getting the portfolio to where it is now over the course of the last couple years, because we know that we were able, one, to capture value. We were able to reposition the portfolio a little more tactically as we saw the environment kind of ebb and flow. But I think going forward, we're going to continue to reinvest. One of the things that we saw, and to your question, is such a good question. You know, we reinvested primarily in treasuries this last quarter. What for us, we look at treasuries as essentially the dry powder in the portfolio. Because it's the safest, most liquid asset class, it gives us that flexibility as there's an opportunity, for instance, say corporate spreads widen for some reason. It allows us to redeploy and reinvest and be a little more selectively opportunistic without feeling that we have to make a decision one way or the other. So continuing to rebalance, probably gravitate a little bit more into treasuries, I would say, like we saw in third quarter, probably see a little bit more of a pickup through fourth quarter. And then at the beginning of the year, we tend to see a bit more corporate issuance because at the end of the year, corporations, you know, they're shoring up their balance sheets. So we don't see as much activity in that space. So for us, capturing that value in more of the treasury market. But we will maintain that strategy going forward and will maintain a bit longer duration.
Okay. Thank you.
Absolutely. And Keith, you had a question as well.
So Annette and Ellie, the trust does have an investment policy statement that gets reviewed periodically. I don't know where we are in that periodic review cycle, but the strategy changes that you were just talking about, they are still within the current investment policy that we have, or are you talking about a need to revisit our investment policy and perhaps tweak that or broaden it or narrow it or do something different to the policy itself, or these are changes we're making within the current investment policy?
Ooh, another good question. So everything that we have from a strategy standpoint is based on the current investment policy. Okay. So we don't make any changes to the overall strategy that would be beyond the scope of what the policy allows for. And more importantly, you know, one, we've got state statute, but for the city's policy, you know, we've got those guardrails in place. So the strategy will remain as it aligns with the current objectives and the current investment policy. And if there is anything that is outside the scope that we feel, you know, is worth recommending or considering, I'll always bring it back to you all. And then we do a due diligence, you know, once a year, just reviewing the policy. Is there anywhere that we have seen changes or potentially should look to broaden or tighten up a bit, et cetera? Those will bring back a red line version as well. So I think for this, you know, I have it on my radar actually to review the policy in first quarter just as my own due diligence. So likely at our second quarter or next meeting, if there are changes, I may send it over ahead of time. But, you know, based on what we have, nothing would require a policy change at this moment.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful. Any other questions?
Thank you, Annette, for the wonderful presentation and for the great investing advice and handling our portfolio that you guys are doing. We appreciate that.
Oh, our pleasure. Thank you for that. And I will share that with the city's portfolio manager as well.
Thank you. All right, so that ends our investment committee quarter update, item 8. We're moving on to new business agenda, item 9. We've got 4 items in there, staff update, compliance special vacancy, trust meeting dates, and investment meeting dates. I'm hoping there's someone in the department that's ready to take this away.
Well, I can certainly address the staff updates. So since we last met, we have had one safety specialist leave. He took a promotional opportunity with a private sector company. And we had one of our longest-term employees who actually retired. And so that's Don Parks. The other one was Mike Smith. Don Parks retired from the city of Tucson 3 weeks ago, and he took a position over at SunTran. So he's going to be over there in their facilities area. We also, since last meeting, we filled a vacant adjuster position, liability claims adjuster position, with Jaime Corrales. And he came from the clerk's office, so he used to receive notice of claims. And so was on the other side, has learned a ton about the other side, our side of the process, doing an amazing job. We filled Mike Smith's position with Heather Carlson. So she's a new safety specialist with us. She is a retired firefighter out of Montana. And we hired, in the report, in the annual report, risk management assumed, possession, I guess that's the right word, over the city's driving program and drug and alcohol testing program. And we had our work comp lead analyst filling in temporarily and managing that. And we have since hired Juan Peru, who is our new newest compliance program analyst, too. So both he and Heather started on August 25th, and those would be the staff changes as they currently sit. We do have one safety specialist vacancy. That's the one that was vacated by Don Parks, who just retired. And so we are working on getting the paperwork completed with HR and putting that on the agenda on our list of department-wide fills moving forward to hopefully get permission to fill that position. And then I think this is all for you. when would you like to meet in 2026? I assume around the same time. I think we had picked today's date last year during this meeting. And if you want to start talking about those dates, it's far enough out that I would say we certainly on our end can accommodate anything you guys come up with.
I'd like to make a recommendation that we stay away from the week of Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Let's put it this way. It's challenging for travel, and today I had to make other arrangements with grandbaby duties. Today's their last day of school, and so it was like, uh-oh. So if we could try to stay away from the week of Thanksgiving, that would be great.
I'm also recalling, Ellie, that the meeting date was also dependent on the department's readiness and the actuary's report being ready and the
correct
digestion that has to happen, and that often it's perhaps not always been the trust board that has set the date, but that we've been flexible for the date that the department would like to have the meeting on and is prepared for the meeting. Is that?
That is correct.
So, Maria, I'm not sure that we're going to give you any more specific information other than we would love to have an annual meeting as required, and it's often in November, in the middle of November. It falls on a date when you guys are ready for us, basically, I think is what normally happens.
Okay. So how does, let's see, I'm thinking the first week of November, because the second week we'll have a holiday in it as well. And then, you know, then we're looking at, you know, skip a week, and then we're looking at Thanksgiving again. So how would November 3rd work, if you would like to keep it on a Tuesday? Keith, are you still interested in having this virtual?
I have liked virtual meetings for all of the boards that I've been on. I think that works for the trustees, and that works for the consultants and professionals that present. It makes everyone's life kind of easier, and we've been able to get our work done with virtual meetings. So I haven't encouraged any of the boards to go back to in person, but I'm very flexible.
All right. How does November 3rd, 4th, or 5th work? That's a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday.
That sounds earlier than usual. Yeah. So if you're certain that you'll be ready, all of those, I think that sounds reasonable. Remembering that I'm probably not the one that should be talking about this and picking the date. I likely won't be in attendance.
So I think Maria, whenever your team is ready, whether it's a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, should work, as long as we have sufficient notice and you're able to pull the material together for the team that works.
I do not see why we could not do Thursday, November 5th. Keith, since your term does expire in 2026, and it sounds like you just said I likely will not be the person to be in attendance, I assume that you're not going to return in any capacity, but then do you have any recommendation for people to reach out to?
This is the end of my 8th year. I'm at the end of my second term. I think we would have to jump through a lot of hoops to get me reappointed if I were willing. And I believe done great public service, and I'm kind of ready to be finished. So.
Right. Okay.
Yes. Well, I wouldn't count on me, even if you wanted to jump through hoops to get me going again, to actually say yes. So.
No, that's okay. That's fair. That's fair. Do you have any recommendations for successors? Do you have any recommendations for additional board members that we should be reaching out to?
I have been out of the loop for quite a number of years already. I pulled together some recommendations. Maria, I think one of the reasons you did, I don't remember if I was involved in you getting on the board or not.
No, Maria Luna, no. I had.
No, you were not.
Then I think I was unsuccessful in everything I tried to do for all of my boards for people. So I wouldn't count on. I have tried in the past to help fill vacancies and have been unsuccessful. So I wouldn't rely on that either.
Okay, no problem.
Maybe it's the 115 Trust where someone from Pima County's on. I will try again, but I can't. My success rate is not high.
That's okay. I will put out my feelers and see what we can come up with.
Right.
And Maria, as to the November 5th date, that works for me if that's still something you're considering.
Okay.
Maria, Allie, I will give you that,
sorry.
One bit of leverage you might have is I know that Pima County is going to need someone for their health benefit trust, which is a self-insurance trust that, other than it being health benefits and not risk, has some similarities and some overlap. I'm wondering if there could be any kind of exchange worked out where, you know, Pima County needs someone and the city will be needing someone. If that helps with any discussion or leverage.
Thank you for the information.
Allie, does the first week of November work better for you?
Mm-hmm.
And Ted, how's the first week of November look for you?
That should be fine.
Will the audited, will the unaudited financial statements be prepared by then?
By November of 26?
Yeah.
Yes, they should be.
Okay.
And they should be
by early November. They have to be ready by the 15th of October or midpoint.
No, I think September. I think it's, go ahead, Angel.
And that was one concern that I had. We will have numbers, but they will not be as close to being accurate or complete as the one you received today.
So if we were to move it to mid-November, would we have more accurate information?
Possibly. We're doing the jig because we were able to submit the ACFA to the auditors that early. I'm hoping we keep that momentum going. So I'd say possibly the second week in November might be a better option.
So we have met as late as December, early part of December.
Right.
Can we move it to the first week in December?
Sure.
That way we are ensured that we're not putting finance team in a hole to try to get everything ready for us. That way we know we will have the information.
Sure. That we need. So that would be, how about December 3rd?
Okay.
That works for me, Rhea. Thank you.
And Jeff, from the budget perspective, you start formulating budget decisions before that. How will that impact us from budget recommendations to Mayor and Councilor?
That may not impact us. The concern I have, I don't know if Annette is still on the call, but I know they usually have the first week of December, they have continuing education series that they put out to the clients. I believe the first week in December. So I don't know how that may affect her attendance.
Mm.
And that depends on the day. Because I know this year, let me pull my calendar up quickly. Let's go the second week of November. And again, like I said, it's not that you will not have numbers. These numbers, it's the draft that we send to the auditors. So we're saying, hey, this is what we've got. Go ahead and audit. As opposed to earlier in the month, you will have numbers that may still need to be adjusted. But it's not that you will not have numbers.
Okay, so the second week in November, Maria, looks like what we're looking at then.
Okay, how does Monday, November 9th work?
Okay.
That depends on if I don't know what the council agenda is. That depends on if we don't have a Monday instead of a Tuesday. Well, when there's no Tuesday, we normally go for Wednesday, so that should be good.
Okay, we'll...
Yeah, we don't normally do it on Monday.
On a Monday, yeah.
Yeah, we don't do it.
So, yes to December?
Yes, November 9th.
Oh, November 9th, got it. Okay.
So, I think that's agenda item 9C. Did you want to discuss investment meeting dates, or did we want to put that together later when we can talk with PFM and schedule something, and when we review how frequently we are supposed to review our investment policy also?
Yes.
I think that's a good idea, especially if we're going to include you and potentially a newly appointed chair or somebody here wants to be chair or something like that. So I think that's probably a good thing to wait on.
All right, then that concludes agenda item 9, unless anybody else has anything else to add. We're moving on to agenda item 10, call to the audience. This is where if there are any audience members that would like to be heard, we'll give them the opportunity to address the full board. Please don't address any individual trustees, but the board is a collective. And we might not be able to and likely can't take any action or do anything with the items presented at this meeting, but we will consider them and schedule an agenda item for a future meeting as appropriate. I would limit every speaker to 3 minutes to be heard by the trust board. Are there any members of the audience that would like to speak at this time and be heard by the trust board? I'm not hearing any or seeing any, so I'll call that agenda item done. Future agenda items. What? Does anybody have any suggestions for future agenda items? I'm not hearing any there either. I think we've had a wonderful meeting. We got a lot done. Our financial picture looks great. We're making a lot of money on our investments, and we've made our recommendation for what the rates should be for fiscal year 26-27. Thank you very much. It's been fun. I would love to entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting at this point.
Before we adjourn, Keith, I just want to say thank you for being an excellent chairman. Thank you for all of your hard work, your efforts, your knowledge, your time. You've come to my rescue when I was the risk manager, but just being engaged and interested in the fund and what the city of Tucson was doing has really helped move us forward. So thank you for all of your services to our community and to our team. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome. It's been a joy and it's been a pleasure and something I have gotten satisfaction doing. And you and your team have been wonderful to work with, both the employees of the city and our consultants. It's been a pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Motion to adjourn, please. If we're done.
So move.
That was Allie moving. Do we have a second?
A second. Maria, Luna.
Hi, Maria. Thank you. Is there any discussion about adjourning? I'm hearing none. So all in favor of adjourning, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? 4-0, we're adjourning. Thank you very much. It's been wonderful to see you. Have happy holidays this week and the rest of the season.
You too. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Have a good holiday.
Okay. Thank you.